And welcome to episode 97 of Tabletop Game Talk, the Kickstarter edition. This is the part of the week where we talk about the Kickstarter games we're backing, might back, and have already received and played. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
And I'm Chris. And this week we're backing Solomon Kane. We're watching Gravity Warfare, So Long My World, Tang Garden, Gorius Maximus, and we're going to talk a little bit about Overturn Rising Sands. And finally, we'll end with a review of Tiny Epic Quest, probably about a year behind schedule on that one, but it is a Kickstarter, and I should review it.
Nice.
Hello, Josh.
Well, I mean, Overturn Rising Sands, you said that with a very skeptical sounding voice. I'm going to enjoy hearing what you have to say about that.
Hey, we'll get there.
We will.
You're jumping all over the place. I'm allowed.
I heard the skeptical tone, and I'm sure our listeners did too, and I thought I'd address it. It's like, why did he use that skeptical tone? We will find out.
Yeah. Well, now we've just piqued a bunch of people's interest. So if you're curious, you have to listen to the whole thing because there's no such thing as skipping ahead. All right. We're going to start with Solomon Kane. So I talked about this a little bit last week, and this week I've decided that, yes, this game needs to be backed. This game is just crazy. I mean, I don't even know how good the game is going to be. I don't know that I even care how good the game is going to be, although it looks pretty cool. The Kickstarter video alone on this has made me say yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all the miniatures with this, the expansions, the stories, the whole concept of this, just the more I dig into it, the more I want to do all of this. And I'm actually even thinking of going and like downloading an Audible collection of Solomon Kane and listening to the entire 15 story series just so I can play this game and like truly live up to what I should be to play this game.
Yeah, I mean, just watching that trailer on Kickstarter was like, this is like a movie, this trailer. I mean, and it, you know, and the whole like world, the CGI world that was amazingly detailed and like so immersive in that video would then morph into the board and things would move around and then like pieces would like start attacking each other. Oh man, I was just blown away by the production values of this Kickstarter. I mean, you've seen many more than me, but so I don't know if any other ones kind of are up on this level, but it's crazy.
This is probably one of the best I've seen as far as Kickstarter videos are concerned, and they're getting really good.
Yeah.
But this is just insane. And I really like what they did with this game because Solomon Kane is like the solo witch hunting hero fighter kind of guy.
Right.
And they didn't make a game where it's like, it's one person controlling this one character. They made a game where it's four people or up to four people controlling this one character. And like that concept is really neat. Like you control an aspect of the character. And you're all together kind of guiding him in the right direction so that he can, you know, complete his missions as he needs to.
That's very, very cool.
So that is the game I'm backing. Like I say, if you want to listen more, a little bit more in depth on it, our Kickstarter episode last week, I believe, we talked about Solomon Kane. And this was one where Kitty's like, I want you to back this one. It was a tight competition with another, but Solomon Kane won out mostly. I can tell you. Number one, this project is Kickstarter exclusive, so you can only get it through the Kickstarter, which means, okay, I need it. Number two, so many miniatures. I don't know why I need more miniatures, but there's so many of them, and they're just really cool looking.
You just need more miniatures in your life to paint, I can tell.
Yeah, I need more time in my life to paint one of these days. Every single one of these miniatures, too, I think this is the game where they all have like some kind of base art or decoration to them. So a lot of times the base is just flat, which is fine. I don't actually mind flat bases at all. But every single miniature in this game has some kind of like ground texture to like pop the miniature out to.
Super cool.
So that'll be fun to paint. The next one is one we talked about. We interviewed, actually. We've already talked about it on a Kickstarter episode. We interviewed about it on our Origins 2018 episode. And I'm just bringing it up now, just very briefly. Gravity Warfare is officially relaunched. I am not going to back it. Sydney says that she's going to back it because she really wants it. I am not backing it because Sydney's going to back it and that allows me to back something else. If she weren't backing it, then we'd be playing chicken. It's like, are you going to back it? No. Are you going to back it? No. Maybe. Yes. But she agreed that she might back this one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm glad that she is because, you know, I really actually enjoy dexterity games. And this one looks like a very unique twist on, you know, just a standard dexterity game. So I'm looking forward to playing it around yours at some point.
Yeah, I like the idea that it's a sci-fi themed dexterity game. Like right. this, like this little horseshoe shaped nebula balance tray galaxy thing. And you're placing spaceships and bases on it. And you're rolling dice and drawing cards and trying to get other people to knock over the universe. That's kind of funny. You're knocking over the universe. But anyway, that's what you're trying to do. You don't want to do it. You're trying to get other people to do it. Sure. And it is. Yeah, it is a fun game, and I'm not a huge dexterity fan, but this here feels, it's a little different to me. It feels like there's more game here than just, you know, pulling Jenga blocks.
Right.
All right, so you got the first one we're actually going to talk about.
I have, that's new. Yes, I know. This one is So Long, My World. It's a 1-5 psychological horror card game where you must face the inevitable end of all humankind. And this is what blew me away about this game, because, you know, most, there are a lot of games out there that are like post-apocalyptic, or, you know, the world might end and you've got to save it. But this one, the world is going to end, all humans will die. And what you're trying to do is actually kind of like reflect through the game on your life and who you are. And it's a sort of card hand management game. And there's a sort of point salad-y element here where you're trying to like be the best, the person with the most insight into your life at the end of the game. And I love this sort of existential, like abstract, like going through your thoughts, feelings and emotions. Like that's such a unique twist in a board game. I've never heard of anything like that. The art for this is gorgeous, and I think it really kind of ties into this kind of, you know, abstract like search for meaning in the world way, but it also just looks really, really cool. So I'm really fascinated by this one, because I am kind of that kind of introspective person who likes to like think about philosophy and like, oh, what does it mean? What do my emotions mean? And I like to like pick at those things, and to have a board game that kind of explores that, I think that's fascinating. So I'm really, really looking forward to this one. I'm glad it met its goal, which it did. And it's just, yeah, there's something very unique about this.
Yeah, when I first saw this, and you know, I looked at the title, and the box cover is this black box with two kind of line drawn hands that are reaching towards each other, but they're not human hands so much as they're gloved or Aztec-y, but reaching for some kind of nebulous, like otherworldly hand.
Yes.
It's the box like caught my attention. And then yeah. I'm like, okay, this is just one of those feely games. It's not really a game. You're just kind of like talking. There's things that, you know, here's some talking points and here's some things and discuss. But no, there's actually a real game here.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I read a couple of and watched some of the reviews, and, you know, people were saying like, you know, the theme is great, but it's not just about the theme. You know, there is actually a really interesting game here. And not only that the actual theme is very sort of embedded through the game. You know, there's kind of like emotion and insight tokens and things, and everything seems to fit very seamlessly into this idea. And then even some of the sort of people who were saying like, you know, even reading some of the cards made them like have goosebumps and stuff. I think this is a very, it's not just a kind of a great concept, but actually the execution seems to be decent from the people that I've read reviews from. Like it seems to be a very cool and well executed game.
Yeah. And like I say, I would play this game with a different theme, and I'd probably still have fun. So did you get a lot of the gameplay out of the videos you were watching? Because it is a hand management type of game. It's point salad-ish. It is.
Yes, exactly. I didn't get into the details of the game because it was a little complex for me. And you know how when I get into details, my eyes start to glaze over and I'm like, I would need to actually play this game to actually get into the finer details. But, you know, it looked interesting.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those games where you really have to, like, you have to play it once to understand. And then, you know, there's actually a comment on here on replayability.
Right.
you know, you can replay the game even after unlocking all of the endings of each scenario. So it's scenario based with different endings. You'll know right. the different paths the games could take, but how you play the game doesn't spoil it going back to it a second time. It's whether you can even get to the end. That's a challenge each time you play.
Ooh.
And it won't be easy. So like that alone is really cool, where it's like this really heavy story game, but it's not just like it's pushing you through so you can quote unquote experience the game. This is a hard game on top of it can pull on those emotional strings.
Absolutely. And, you know, I actually didn't really touch on the psychological horror part of this, because obviously the world is ending, so that some people are kind of, you know, really indulging in their dark side, because it's like, well, the world's ending, who cares? And so there's many cards where you can kind of do really horrible, nasty things and kind of mess with each other. It's kind of an interesting twist to it as well. Like, what would happen if you know, everyone knew they were going to die? Would some people kind of go crazy and do some disgustingly horrible things? So it's got that dark streak through it as well, where you get to mess with some of the other players.
Yeah, you're trying to basically work with five different feelings in the game, which is hope, nostalgia, resignation, despair, and madness.
Right.
And it is like no one of them is right or wrong. It's just how you deal with your character getting to the end. And it's still character-based. Like it's not you personally going through, but it's you playing your character to go through.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really interested in this one. On the stats and logistics, it ends July 10th. The base game is $35 and the deluxe is $57. And that was So Long, My World.
Yeah, and I highly recommend getting the deluxe for anything that's Kickstarter, because deluxe is always cooler. That's why they call it deluxe.
Addict.
Stop judging me.
Never.
All right, speaking of deluxe, I'm going to be talking about Tang Garden. Now, Tang Garden, I actually saw this on Kickstarter as I was browsing through, and the landing page isn't necessarily something I would normally jump to. It is this sort of, I guess it's a Chinese garden-y game. On its surface, that's what I saw. And then I saw it like rising up on Board Game Geek on the hotness list, and I'm like, all right, I should probably take a closer look at this. And I'm kind of glad I did, because this looks like something that I will really like, and Josh, I think you will like this as well.
Right.
So you're building an imperial garden in the Tang Dynasty. So let's see, what is there over here? Build an imperial garden by creating the landscape and placing the scenery in a Zen-like Euro game. Play solo or up to four players. So the way this game plays is, it is a tile laying game at heart. On your turn, you can take two different actions. You can either lay a tile or you can build something on the tiles that you have out there. There's some other couple optional actions you can take as well, and there's some forced actions you can take for scoring. But the tile laying, it's kind of like Carcassonne tiles, except for they're much bigger. I think they're either twice as big or like maybe, you know, one and a half as big. So you have water tiles, you have greenery tiles, you have wheat tiles, which are like these just kind of dirtish tile type things. And when you place the tile down, you have to make sure that it fits with the rest of the scenery. You then have things that you can build on those tiles, which can be, you know, you put fish on the water things. You can put trees in the forest tiles. You can build bridges over, you know, a water path. What you're trying to do is essentially get to a point where you're able to maximize your points. But this game is incredibly three-dimensional, because one of the ways that you get points is you're actually going to be putting scoring tiles up, and where you put the scoring tiles will create a line of sight where you can look across the board, and where you put your characters, it will give you like bonuses based on the type of terrain you have built and the type of structures you have built on there. You need line of sight to score those points. So it's a very three-dimensional game. So if you were to picture it in your head, take a jumbo-sized version of Carcassonne and then mix in some photosynthesis with a few gazebos and bridges and fish here and there, and you have kind of what it would look like on the board.
Yeah.
It doesn't play like any of those.
It looks incredible, and I think the art is just insane. Like, it's so colorful, rich, and vibrant, and so well-executed. Like, it's gorgeous.
This is a game where if it is on the table and someone walks by, they're like, whoa, what are you doing? What are you playing there? Because it's just so, it's three-dimensional. There's no really other way to say it. It's very three-dimensional. Now, the three-dimensional elements are made out of cardboard or cardstock, the thick cardstock. So you're building your, you know, crosshatch trees. You're just putting two pieces of cardboard together. The gazebos actually look pretty tricky because those are either four, I think they're five sides. So you're building these kind of like multi-walled gazebos. Right. You have bridges that you're building. There's little fish that can swim around in the stream. All of these things give you points. So as you're laying these down, you're getting points. It's a tile laying point salady game, but done in such a way that it's, I just want to touch it and play with it and play this game.
Oh yeah.
So, and of course it's a Kickstarter and it's a game. So there are plastic miniatures involved as well. So those are your characters that are moving around. Everything else is made out of like the cardstock, but the characters themselves are plastic minis. So, and when I say cardstock, it's probably better described as punch board as opposed to cardstock. It's not like a thin, flimsy card. It's token quality, you know,
right,
thicker punch board.
Yep.
Let's see. So this one goes until July 10th. The base game is $52, but the deluxe game is $75. And it says it's the deluxe bundle. So you get a physical copy. You get all the Kickstarter collectible metal first player tokens. You get all the stretch goals. So you just get a bunch of extra stuff. This nice. One, actually, the deluxe bundle includes an expansion, too, called Ghost Stories. So this is why you always get the deluxe version.
All right.
And Josh, you still haven't backed anything on Kickstarter, have you?
No.
Yeah, no pressure. There is an entire faction of people out there that are like, Josh, don't buy. Josh, don't buy.
I'm not sure they listen to our podcast.
Well, all I know is I'm looking forward to the day that I find a game that you're like, okay, I must buy this game.
It will happen. I promise.
All right. Well, maybe it'll be this one. Maybe it will be the next one. So that is Tang Garden. Like I say, goes till July 10th. Buy the deluxe version. $75.
Yes. Well, next we have Gorus Maximus. And as from that name, Maximus, you've probably guessed, it's kind of gladiatorial, ancient Rome combat within a trick-taking setting. So this is a trick-taking game, and the kind of art style really kind of caught my eye because it's very... have you ever seen something called Horrible Histories, Chris?
I think I have, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of like kind of like fun, tongue-in-cheek short novels for kind of teens and young adults about history and kind of made in a fun way. But they're kind of cartoony and very gory, and kids love it. And this has got that exact style, like very cartoony, very gory, but in a kind of silly, fun way. You know, they've got bloody ostriches that try and attack you, some of the like artwork, and you've got these crocodile heads that are just stuck on spears and things. Like, it's kind of gratuitous violence, but so silly that it's not really that bad. But I thought the game was interesting because, you know, it's pretty much a classic trick-taking game, except there's this really cool rule in it that I think really changes things up, which is that once the kind of the trump suit is decided, as you're playing the round, if someone matches with the exact same number and a different suit, then the suit then flips and the new trump suit is the new card that matched the exact number of the one before. So if you played a yellow 12, Chris, and I played a pink 12, now the trick-taking suit is now pink instead of yellow as it was before. So I think it kind of adds this element because, you know, sometimes with trick-taking games, I'm kind of like, well, you know, I'm out of this round already. You know, I can see that yellow's gone down. I've got, you know, only a one yellow. Everyone's going to destroy me. Well, now the trumps can change midstream. So I think that's going to be kind of an interesting one.
Yeah, this I like kind of like that because it's sort of like a strike, counter-strike kind of thing. I'm going to reverse right. what you've just done.
Exactly.
And I think really? That, yeah, I think Kitty would actually, well, she loves trick-taking games because she yep. can get Spencer to play them, but I don't know that she would like this one due to the that gratuitous rule. Nature of it, but I'm not actually sure. Like, it's such over-the-top fake cartoon violence
yep.
that you almost can't take offense to it. It's almost funny it's that violent.
Right. I mean, they're just all wearing blood as if it's not even there. It's like they will have like sort of a wet t-shirt contest full of blood. You know, there's a silly cartoon bear and it just looks kind of like red paint, really.
Yeah. I mean, and on the Kickstarter page, the cartoon bear is chewing. It's a little gif of him chewing on a severed limb.
Yeah. But it's just so cartoony. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, he also has three arrows stuck in him and a sword in his back. So, yeah. You know, he needs his nutrition so that he can heal and get better.
He really does.
It does definitely live up to its name, though, which is Gorus Maximus.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And this goes until July 11th. The base game is how much?
Ooh, the base game is 15 and the 20 for the premium.
And why wouldn't you do the premium version?
Because you're frugal and you care about the future.
I think there's a video on here where they take the premium version, which I think is made of plastic cards, right. And they're like dunking all the cards underwater and stuff to show that this is what the premium cards are.
Oh, I see. Yeah, absolutely.
So if you want to play this by a pool or a beach or take it on vacation or something, this actually, the premium version here just really gets you like some like almost indestructible cards.
Well, if you don't mind your kids seeing like silly cartoony violence, I can see it being good for sort of family game, you know, as well. Because trick-taking games are easy for kids to pick up, but they're, you know, they're likely to spill things and chew things.
Yeah, this is almost perfect for 9-year-old boys and up.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Not trying to be in any way stereotypical, but a little bit in this case.
Absolutely.
All right. So the next one we're going to talk about, I'm not necessarily going to talk about the game all that much, but I wanted to bring it up because you might. and we should. And we should because the game itself looks pretty interesting. Right. But I've had a number of people ask questions about this particular Kickstarter. And my stance on it, because I saw it last week, and my stance on it was I'm going to wait and see. So I'm going to, spoiler alert, jumping to the end. This is a wait and see for me. The game we're talking about is Overturn, Rising Sands. Now, there's a couple things that make some red flags happen. Now, we talked about Kickstarter, and when I select games, I'm looking for, you know, things that I think are going to fund and things that I pretty sure are going to be fulfilled on and stuff. And there's a few things where I'm like, you know, typically I'm not really worried about people, you know, completing board games. I've never had one not fulfill.
Right.
But I've also been a little cautious of some of them where I'm like, this one just doesn't feel right for some reason. Overturn Rising Sands, I think it's not even a subtitle, it's just Overturn Rising Sands. Although I think it is Overturn in the subtitles Rising Sands. So Overturn is amazing. It has a Kickstarter video that is, you know, in the same league as Solomon Kane.
Right.
It's pretty cool what they're doing with it. It is created by Foxtail Studios, which is a brand new studio. It's, as far as I can tell, it's just a couple people. And they put this game up there, and within the first 3 days, they had over 2,000 backers. They had raised over $250,000, and it was like, this looked like the next huge, big miniatures game. Their funding goal was $33,753. How people get to these weird random numbers, I don't know. Sometimes it has to do... Actually, no, this one, never mind. This is because of U.S. conversion. Actually, their funding goal was $45,000 Canadian. So that makes a little bit more sense. The problem is, after the first 3 days, people started commenting on this, and the studios didn't actually get back to them. Foxtail Studio didn't get back to the commenters fast enough and with answers to the questions when they finally did get back to them. So this comment thread has almost 3,800 comments as of this recording. And it just keeps going. Like, it's one of the most active comment threads of any board game I'm currently watching, for sure.
Right.
And they're trying, like, Foxtail Studios is trying to, like, you know, manage all of the negative feedback, all of the questions. Nobody's happy with what they're doing, those types of things. There's kind of cries for, you know, you should cancel this and restart. The biggest thing that I have as a concern for this is there's no rule book yet. And for a game that has as much production, like video, as, you know, all of the game figures, like the screenshots, which are mostly 3D. So I don't know that any of this stuff is Someone has prototypes of it, and Josh will talk about that in a second. But most of the marketing material on the Kickstarter page is all just like 3D renders and software rendering. For a game that looks this far along, not having a rule book that they can put up is a huge red flag for me. And that's one of the biggest things that people are demanding for. And what they're saying is like, we want to make sure we get it right. We don't want to just push, you know, rush something out. And that's fine. But you did launch the Kickstarter, and now you have people concerned because there's this gorgeous looking Kickstarter and not a lot of extra information with the questions that are being answered. That said, I would absolutely back this if I knew this was like a legit and, you know, they were going to be able to raise enough money to actually fulfill it. There's no doubt in my mind. Josh, what did you think when you, because you watched this I was going to talk about it as something to back.
Yeah. And to be honest, you know, I guess I come from the other side of the argument because I'm looking at this as someone who's new to the Kickstarter and I see nothing wrong with it because, you know, you did say that like there are a lot of 3D renderings on here, but further down the page, and unless they're very, very good CGI things that look like photo pictures, but there's like photographed pictures of like kind of the how it will finally look, and those miniatures and pieces all look great, and they don't seem to be 3D renderings. And then we've also got a review from I forget his channel now, Board Game Brawl or something, is it? Something like that, but he's like a well-known Kickstarter reviewer, and he was kind of singing its praises and saying that, you know, it's this great game with so much layers to it, so much depth to it. There's kind of a mechanic where, you know, because you're in this land that's kind of like a bit like Arabian Nights, Middle Eastern kind of setting, and it kind of has a feel to it when I look at it like Arcadia Quest, but it's got this unique theme where even though it's fantasy and it has sort of some ifrits and some supernatural stuff, it's set in this kind of Middle Eastern desert oasis. And even though it looks and feels at first glance a lot like Arcadia Quest, which is a great thing because it's a great game, where you kind of jump around a map and, you know, there's NPC enemies and then there's boss battles and there's like, you know, you have these characters that gain experience over time and it's like a campaign thing where each single, you know, round will then level up your character and you'll carry those experience points forward. So there's a lot of overcross there with Arcadia Quest, but then there's also elements.
I will say that just to be fair to this game, if you don't like chibi and you don't like the tongue-in-cheek sense of humor and animation, that is not part of this. This is a much more realistic, well, I don't know about realistic, but much more, you know, stereotypical Middle Eastern setting type of thing. It's a darker, grittier setting. But absolutely. I understand with the gameplay you're talking about, yes, you can kind of picture dudes on a map running around. Yeah.
Exactly. But then it's got these unique elements where like the NPCs in this, there's a whole mechanic about whether they're going to spot you or not. And you have to kind of like hide behind things. And then if they do see you, there's a kind of a chance they will or they won't. They might shout for help. So these NPCs are kind of like make it come alive with this kind of, have we spotted him? Haven't we? If we do, are we going to call for backup element? And so it kind of comes alive. There's also a time limit and there's some chaos clock that goes round for each round, and so you're kind of feeling the pressure. There's also NPCs that you can talk to and gain information from that might like kind of help you, and they might join you on your quest and help defeat people, or they might give you some items that are going to like supercharge you, which is another element that you don't really get from Arcadia Quest. So it definitely has a lot of unique elements. I think the theme is very unique, being fantasy but kind of being that gritty realist oasis, desert oasis thing. And then these mechanics as well seem really interesting. And that's the thing that this guy was, who's, you know, one of these well-known reviewers, I think it's Board Game Brawl, was saying, you know, that he really liked it and you know, he thought it was very interesting. So, you know, from someone who's trusted getting the game and actually playing it, seems to be positive.
Yeah. And I'm actually, like I said, I'm hoping that this is everything they have it. They say it is. I think it's just they need to figure out how to make a Kickstarter that has grown, that like took off this quickly, how to make sure, you know, how do you keep 2,000 people happy?
I see what you're saying now. So it's not necessarily the game itself that's the thing that's broken. It's just the fact that these guys might be new to, you know, creating board games and kind of managing this level of interest. And because it's far exceeded its initial goal, they might have trouble keeping up with that. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I'm basically saying is you have a couple thousand people who are going to ask you some tough questions. You know, right. The vast majority of them are not. You know, if there's 2,000 people, 1,980 of them are not going to say a word. They're going to be like, oh my God, this is awesome. I can't wait till I get it.
Right.
20 people that are very active in the comments thread, though, start to bring up more and more questions, you know, and they start to say, okay, I need you to answer this. I need this to make sense. And the comments, like the updates are coming far more often now. You know, we're getting a couple a day from this. So I think they're trying to jump on really, really fast to this because at the beginning, it wasn't really, there just was nothing coming out of it that was like making people comfortable. Right. So I bring it up only because I do not think this is a write-off. I don't actually think this is a scam. I don't think that these guys are just trying to make a bunch of money and run away.
No.
If anything, I'm only a little bit concerned about whether or not they understand what it would take to fulfill a project like this.
Right.
And a solid rule book would make me very happy and comfortable enough. They're planning on being able to fulfill this in July of 2019, which is a year from now. And I think that's an easy number to say, but if they're not ready to send this thing off for production, like shortly after the Kickstarter completes, it's going to be, they're not going to hit that date. And then that's going to be tricky too. So,
Yeah. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think just the slickness of this page, even the actual photos of the, you know, kind of the final pieces makes me feel like, you know, they actually have production level pieces that they have, you know, somewhere that they've taken photos of. At least those things are in place. Like you said, this is clearly not a scam. This is someone who knows what they're doing to some extent. It's just how experienced are they? Can they handle this level of interest?
Yep. Well, hopefully we will talk about this again. And so I just to give you kind of the details of this, this is going for another, let's see, 19 days as this podcast drops. It's going until July. Why is this not on here? July 19th. The base game, like the base pledge here is $88 US, 117 Canadian, or 135 US for like their up graded thing. It's another 135 to get all the add-ons. I think that that's one of the ways that they're going to try to like increase the funding so they can kind of you know fund the base games. Actually, sorry, 150 for all the add-ons. And hopefully we'll talk about this again in a couple weeks, and I will be saying I'm backing it because they do have a rule book and they did turn around the whole reputation thing here. It's kind of, I don't normally go to kicktrack.com because I don't really normally care. But this one was interesting of what's going on here. So if the first 3 days, it was like huge numbers of backers. The next 3 days, it was very little numbers of backers. And the last 4 days have been dropping backers. So more people have dropped out in the last 4 days than have backed it.
Right.
So that's not necessarily a good trend. That's showing that, you know, you're kind of losing the faith of your backers. But if they can turn that around, I'm going to be in on this, so I'm going to still stamp this with a wait and see.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
All right. Let's do a quick review of Tiny Epic Quest.
Right.
So Tiny Epic Quest is in the Tiny Epic series of games. I love the Tiny Epic series of games in general. Tiny Epic Zombies is coming out pretty soon, and that is the second game using the item meeples. I talked to the owner of the company for their not Tiny Epic game, but for the expansion of Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. And it occurred to me that I hadn't done a review on Tiny Epic Quest, which is probably my favorite of the Tiny Epic games.
Nice.
I haven't made you play this one, right, Josh?
No, I haven't played it. I'm looking at the pictures now. It looks really colorful and vibrant.
Yes. So this one here is, like all of their games, it's a small box game. And the basically what you're doing is you're going to lay out these cards that generate like a random terrain. And by doing that, you have this sort of 4x4 grid, but it's not quite 4x4. It's a little bit oddly shaped. But it's still really cool. And you have three heroes that you start in the castle and you're going to go out and you're going to quest for things. Now, there's a lot of game in the small box. The box is something, 7 inches by 4.5 inches plus maybe 1.5 inches tall. It's not a big box, but the table space this game takes up is significant. But you have these meeples that run around. They're plastic meeples and they have two little holes for hands. And you have all these items that have little pegs that you can put in the hole. So as you're running around, you're gathering all these different items that you can equip your little meeples with. And those things give your meeples special abilities and powers. You don't have to track them separate because you just look at your meeple and you're like, oh, he has a sword and a shield. He has a bow. He has a scroll. He has a staff. And I know what these things do because I have the item card in front of me. There's also, you're able to fight goblins, you're able to go into temples to increase your magic, you're going on epic quests. You're essentially trying to go around and at the end of the game have the most points. It's a pretty common theme in this. But there's also this press your luck mechanic with a strong follow, which is another thing. Scott Alms is the person who does these designs. It's another thing he likes is this, like, you do an action and then everyone can follow you if, ooh, you know, for whatever reason.
Yep.
So you have these five movement cards on the board, and I'm going to select a card, and I'm going to flip that movement card over, and then I'm going to do that movement. I'm going to resolve my action when I get there, and then Josh, you get to decide, do you want to do that same movement or not? And then you get to take that, so you're kind of following. Once four of the five movement cards, which are all different types of movement, are picked, then everyone, it's nighttime. And when you go nighttime, there's this rolling dice, and you kind of press your luck mechanic. So I could roll damage dice where I do damage to myself, and then if there's more than one damage dice, I then do damage to Josh, and then it goes around until all the dice are spent. There's also power dice where the same kind of thing happens. There's dice for increasing magic and torches, which get you deeper into the temples, and mushrooms, which increase, well, that's the one that increases your magic. And you're trying to up your magic level, up your spell level, up your power level, up your health, get all these items. This game is just really, really fun and so much game in this small box that is sort of ridiculous. If you haven't, I don't have to go too much into detail here. If this sounds like something that's cool to you, like a big table game, it has a big presence on the table, but fits into a small box, has a fantasy theme, allows you to do all this questing, adventuring, gathering equipment, slaying things. If that's your kind of thing and you haven't checked this out, just stop whatever you're doing. If you're on the road, pull over. YouTube Tiny Epic Quest. There's a Watch It Played on this, so you can learn from Rodney Smith. And he'll walk you through the whole thing too. This game is awesome. So I needed to throw a Kickstarter review in there. And like I say, I have a backlog of the ones that I wanted to get in here. So that's what I'm going to do. Josh, do you want to play this game?
Well, I mean, it sounds like one of those games where I think I could pick it up fairly easily. I mean, you know how I feel about kind of complicated things with lots of things to manage. It doesn't feel like that. So I think as long as it isn't, then I'm on board.
Yeah. There is a barrier. If you're the one opening the box and trying to teach yourself the game, there is a lot here. Right. So there's that barrier of, wait a minute, whoa, what, why? This is way more game than I expected. Right. Once you've played the game, just a turn or two and you're like, oh, I get it. Everything makes sense. You know, satisfying quests are easy. The press your luck dice mechanic, no problem. Gathering magic, yeah. And it's one of those things where you want to try to do everything, but you really can't do everything, but you still need to optimize as much as you can. It's a fun little puzzly push your luck adventure game.
I like the sound of this. And I think it's really cute how the meeples have little weapons and things that they can pick up. I haven't seen that in a game before. And it's such a kind of a simple thing, but it like makes it really cool.
Yeah, I was talking to the owner of the company and I'm like, you need to create a box, which is like a role-playing miniatures box where you have all of these different characters. You can put all of these different, you know, item meeple things in there. You create some tiles. So essentially, instead of 1-inch square for role-playing games, you could do like, you know, 1/2-inch or 3/4-inch square and get a lot more out there and just be able to have a small box of, here's my role-playing game kit.
Nice. I like it.
So I actually picked up 2 copies of Tiny Epic Zombies and another copy of Tiny Epic Quest just so I could have the extra meeples, just so I could do that myself. But it'd be nice if he just did it all in one box.
That's very cool. You are such a interesting, creative soul. You've done it yourself.
I'm just saying, I'm always looking for new ways to bring my game alive.
No, I like it.
And this is one of them in tiny little plastic meeples carrying swords and bows and stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, these are only supposed to take a half hour. This took longer than a half hour. So, Josh, that's the sooner you read the rest of this, the sooner we can let people get back to their day and listen to the next podcast on their list.
Right. Let's hope they didn't pull over in the middle of the freeway like you told them to. So thanks for listening. And if you missed this week's topic episode on asymmetrical games or any of our other episodes, you can find them all at tabletopgametalk.com. And of course, you can subscribe to us wherever you find your podcasts. You can also follow us on Facebook at @TabletopGameTalkPodcast, Twitter at @TabletopGameTLK, and Chris at @GameMasterChris. If you have a Kickstarter... Oh,
so, wait. Yeah, Kitty did something last episode. She interrupted me and I just didn't update the notes here. Kitty now has a Twitter handle especially for us.
Wow.
Lawful Good Mom. So at Lawful Good Mom, if you want to follow Kitty, you can find her there. And now Josh has been challenged to come up with a Tabletop Game Talk specific Twitter handle that he'll participate in.
That is a big challenge. That is a big challenge. I'm going to try and find Kitty and I'm going to type in Lawful Good Mom and be very disappointed. But no, that's great. That's great. I'm glad she has and she's laid down the gauntlet. So we will see. Watch this space. So, if you have a Kickstarter you think we should check out, email us at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com with the subject Kickstarter. And finally, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jilmjam, George Deere, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, and the SGC. Until our next regular episode, when we talk about non-gamer significant others, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.